Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in to Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told on Sunday, January 12th, 2020, on Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's Lighthouse Christian Radio, 89.9 FM, KLRB, out of Oklahoma. It seems like it's been longer since it actually has been that we've met up here on Blog Talk and on this live radio broadcast because there's just so much work to do. And there never seems enough time to get it done in. But that being said, we know if there's enough time for the bad things to still be happening, it would warrant that there needs to be enough time to continue exposing what's wrong and continue to do our very best to come up and solve the problems and make what is wrong right. Do we do this one by one? Do we do this collaboratively? How many are out there just suffering from the public corruption that exists in this world today? And how many are just completely oblivious to it and not necessarily in an arrogant manner, but just because they really don't know better? Because how many of us can stand up and say, gosh, never would have imagined that these things actually do take place, that these things really do happen. It doesn't happen everywhere. It doesn't happen with every public servant and every administration in cities and towns and states and whatnot. But unfortunately, the consensus seems to be that the tides have turned so much away from our constitutional rights, not to mention our moral and ethical duty to our neighbor, if you will, and that it really must be told in the way that it's happening. So here we are, 2020. Kind of talk about, to reflect a little bit about what's gone right, talk a little bit about, probably more about what we need to do and the philosophies behind how we're doing it and what we're doing and what it's going to take. It was nice that I did hear today from somebody that a judge was removed from a family court and a case was dismissed. Or overturned. And those things are really good to hear about when something can be changed before it's too late. I love to hear those stories. So I encourage those stories and not only encourage, but I request that because we want to hear from you about what you did and how it worked out for you, making what's wrong or right. And also, what was it that was wrong? The judge involved, wherever you're from. So remember that we want to hear that information too, because it could be helpful Everybody's story is a little bit different, but when it comes to the injustices in regard to public corruption, what I have found, and I think that many of us will nod our heads yes, that are familiar with the public corruption that does take place, that after you hear a certain amount of stories, you can say, gee, I can tell, we can tell each other stories, because there seems to be a certain pattern of things that happen, just different players. But these patterns seem overall to be in place, that they just go without saying. And you hear not only judges say, because it's my court, but you also hear city mayor say, because I said so, and as well as, you know, whatever somebody says because of a particular position that's held, it seems, if they're on the wrong side, promoting, advocating, conspiring on the side of public corruption, that it's just because. And should you want to argue, should you want to state your own truth, sometimes there really is not two sides to the story. There's really one side, and that is the truth. It's not just what people get away with saying or not saying, showing or not saying, that they try to snuff you out, that they try to relieve you of your voice. Well, that's no relief if you're on the, if you are being abused by the public corruption. So again, I'm Tanya Hathaway, and I really do appreciate you tuning in tonight after this little bit of time lapse here since the end of the end of the year. And I'm not an attorney, so during discussion, I do offer my opinion, but the words not to be used or meant for legal advice. All guests are vetted to the best of our ability, my ability, yet myself, Tanya Hathaway, Marty Oki, Stephen Burke, personally and professionally, cannot be held liable for errors or information. That said, we do appreciate and ask for any feedback and corrections. That is absolutely welcome. Go ahead and jump on ppjg.me, and that's Marty Oakley, the owner of TS Radio Network, and she does have a blog there, and you should start reading some of these articles, and this is also where you will find all of the hosts with their shows. This show is in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Annual Whistleblower Summit. I'd like to thank my mother if she's listening tonight. I did not update her that there will be a show tonight, but I'd like to thank my mother. And I would like to, of course, thank Marty Oakley for her commitment and her persistence in this venue that has ever so faithfully brought to light the wrongs and has essentially been very much a trailblazer in the elder abuse venue. And recently there was a great article that was published in I just got a message from Marty. Okay. Hi Marty, I got that. Thank you. There's recently an article that was published in the National Association Stop Guardianship Abuse, NAGS, NAG, goodness, I'll have to find that and get back to you a little bit later on, about Marty, specifically written for Marty, who who doesn't take compliments very well and, as the article says, doesn't look for accolades, but it really does recognize her commitment to not only the guardianship abuse, but all forms of public corruption and helping expose what's going on through her hosts and her advocacy on this show as well. And also through her forum at the Whistleblower Summit in Washington, D.C. But also, I want to thank Stephen Burke, who has faithfully been broadcasting this show on his public radio station on 89.9 FM KLRB, Lighthouse Christian Radio. It's a not-for-profit, of course, okay? But he took it upon himself to do what he felt is a calling for him, and heard of this show, and somebody got in touch with me on behalf of him a couple of years ago, saying that he was interested in possibly carrying this show on his radio station. And so since then, Stephen has been a great advocate after he vetted me and listened in and has offered his opinions and continues to talk about the show and ongoing current events and including public corruption after the show airs as well as at other times, which is not always very popular for him. But Stephen Burke, I've been asking him to come on the show and talk with me, his co-host, and let's talk with me for some time. And tonight he agreed to do that, to jump on board, not just be the producer behind the scenes of the show, but also to be here with me tonight and to be with you tonight and offer his feelings and wise words of wisdom as we, in essence, have a little bit of a round table tonight. Now, Stephen's been actively concerned about public corruption since he was 16 years old, and we'll find out what led him to that concern. But his intention, as he says, and it's on the preview for the show, is, quote, my intention and purpose is to be a watchman, as God has told us to be, to pay attention to what's really going on and to inform people. So I think that that's quite a calling, quite a responsibility. Stephen also does minister with a couple of others regularly throughout the month, approximately two times out of each month, to inmates. He is a lifelong student of our Constitution. Boy, oh boy, when Stephen and I off-air get talking about our constitutional rights and the history of the Constitution and the application of it, I can't help but think just how much I don't know, even though, of course, I think I know a lot but never enough. But when I speak with Stephen about the Constitution, I don't hear him, you know, looking around and doing quick searches on the subject, because he has a lot that has been embedded in him due to his studies and his discussions that instead of just, you know, none of us, including Stephen, knows all of the answers, you know, right off the bat, but it's not hard for him to explain something to us all. And so tonight I welcome and I thank Stephen Burke for his service in the exposing public corruption and to being a watchdog. So thank you, Stephen, for joining us. Are you with us now?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Stephen. I got you to finally come on.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I'm not much of a talker, but, you know, if you get me going, that might be another story.
So I think we can poke the bear a little bit on this subject. But, Stephen, would you mind if, before we start poking the bear, not that you're a bear, I'm kind of joking around, we've got a couple of callers on the line right now that would like to talk about the upcoming rally for actually next December. We've got Tina Gert and Shad, who have been working diligently and asked if they could come on and just to give a brief synopsis about the rally. And so, Marty, do you have them on? I'm just messaging her.
I'm here.
Oh, Tina, you're here. Great, yeah. great. And is Shad with you?
I don't know if he's called in yet. I can message him really quick.
Okay. All right, well, we can always have him call. Okay, all right, I got the message that you were both on, but you know what? It was you and Steven that were on. So forgive me because I know you said it would be closer to 7:30.
Right.
So we can get started with Steven as the original plan was, and then you guys can jump on and tell, and so you can just hang in there with us, and when he calls in, I'm sure that Marty will let us know, and we can talk about the rally a bit with Steven, and so you can announce what's going on or where you're at with that, who some of your guests are going to be. In the meantime,
okay.
Steven. Okay. Thank you, Tina. So, Steven, you're there, right? Okay. As you shared, you got interested in public corruption when you were about 16 years old. What was it that, you know, turned your head that way? Was there a particular event or?
Yeah, what happened when I was 7 years old, I started buying old shortwave radios and repairing them and selling them. Believe it or not, my mom let me stick my fingers in that stuff that had 600 volts in there, and one wrong move would have killed me. But I fixed those radios, and I'd listen to them and listen to all these foreign broadcasts, and I was finding that the news was quite different that I was hearing from certain places in the world than what our news was. And I got to discovering that our news was censored, and they just told us what they wanted us to hear. And stuff like that. So I got to listening to shortwave stations from all over the world to find out what was really going on. And then when I was 16 years old, I started reading books about our banking system and the 12 families that control the banking system and all that sort of thing. So that's what started it all.
That's a pretty big idea and quite a concept for many to swallow. Not just at 16 years old, but at 60 years old, many people are not aware of just how the banking system is, where and how it's really controlled by these families that. Some probably only know a few names of that sound familiar to us, but let's see. We've got the Rothschilds being one of them.
Yeah. Yep, one of the main ones right there.
That's one of them. Okay, let's talk about it. All right, let's name another one. Let's intrigue people into doing some research.
I don't know if I can remember all them names right now. I'm not real good with names, but we had the Rothschilds, and if somebody rattled off the other names, I'd probably know if they was the right family or not, but it's been a while since I studied all that stuff that happened in the middle of the night while Congress was on leave out there on Jekyll Island. You know, they had to do it all in secret, start the Federal Reserve and all that nonsense.
Right. Right. The Federal Reserve is not our friend. Is that what you're saying?
It's absolutely not our friend, and it's not owned by the United States of America either. That's a British-owned corporation.
Right. It's so who might the stockholders be of that? Because it's a corporation.
Yeah, well.
The Rothschilds are the major.
Yep. Those 12 families are the biggest part of it.
Yeah. And so this is one of the first realizations where, you know, public corruption was born. And in a big way. In a very big way. And And we do realize now that, you know, that Washington, D.C., that we're run by a corporation, that and that's why it's so important for us to go back to those pre-corporation days and rely on our Constitution, as we should anyways, which in essence trumps, and there's no pun meant to be there for that, but it trumps the actions of the corporation where, you know, as many of you have heard, if you look at your birth certificate and, you know, you'll find out that your name is when you're first born, that your name is written in all caps, all uppercase letters, and on the Social Security card, all uppercase letters from the time on of when we started being ordered around by this corporation in our country that is a for-profit, and that we all have a price tag on our heads. It's just how much we are worth to the corporation, and that's part of the problem when it comes to the public corruption and things like guardianship abuse, as Marty Oakley has preached, because when they run out of money, when we no longer have money as an individual person that they profit off of us for, then they don't mind killing
this
us.
This is Shad Hagen.
Hi, Shad. How are you? Great. So hold on just a minute, because we're going to finish this thought with Stephen Burke, and then I'll ask you and Tina to come on and just give us a little bit of information about the rally. So we're glad you're here. So just hold on just a minute. So, Stephen, what do you have to say about that?
Well, you're correct. Anything that's in all caps legally designates that it's a corporation. And if you want to really go back to where it all started, the United States, in a bankruptcy settlement, incorporated the whole entire United States as a British corporation on February 21st, 1871, in Dover, Delaware. That's where it all started. The rest of the world was incorporated as subcorporations underneath the United States Corporation in 1874. And you can do some digging if you want to really find this stuff. They've got most of it hidden. They don't like this to be common knowledge, but again, I'll repeat that. The United States was incorporated as a British corporation on February 21, 1871 in Dover, Delaware. And every aspect of our government, right down to your local judge, is a subcorporation operating underneath that for the benefit of the British government.
For the benefit of the British government. And I've done a great deal of research on this myself. But for our listeners that have also done a great deal of many that have also done a great deal of research and have an idea about this, but also for those that don't, so that can go check and validate this themselves, and you know it'll take you to places, listeners, where you've never been before and where you never imagined as you dive into this deeper. But what do you have to say about the purpose of it being for the benefit of the British government?
Well, they're protecting their bankruptcy settlement, make sure they get their money, because the United States defaulted on our loans that we had with the British, not once, but twice.
And, so this is this corporation is alive and well, and we are certainly in debt. Our country is certainly in debt by the trillions, and so it does seem to make sense, doesn't it? And so we always hear about our debt. It's just how much in debt we choose to remain to be. But it sounds to me as though That is the way to protect against against defaulting, is through profiting off of our heads, our lives, by giving us away to others and protecting themselves. And this corporation has also, unfortunately, turned into a breeding ground for corruption. Well, you know, let's think. First of all, did we really know what was going on in 1871? Well, we know that there wasn't, you know, the modern manners of passing on information. But, you know, again, we can get sucked into things and not even realize what's happening. Did we really have a choice? Do we really have a choice? Well, that isn't, that part of it will be for another conversation, as far as, do we have a choice to be involved and engaged in this corporation? Can we remove ourselves from this corporation and cash in our collateral or what we're worth? But for right now, I'd like to welcome you, Shad and Tina. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, and then tell us a little bit about the second annual rally that is coming up. And I know you've been working hard on it.
Well, my name is Tina. My husband was wrongly convicted, and I was having trouble getting anybody to listen, the legislators and senators. So last year we had our first rally, and the next one is coming up on December 3rd. And the speakers there are going to be Kathy Shriver, who's the grandmother of the Shriver brothers, and she's going to discuss their wrongful conviction. Emily Barnes, who has an associate's degree, will be talking about the juvenile system and how it prepares the kids for prison, and it doesn't help them at all. And then there will be Shad, and I will let him tell you about himself.
I'm Shad Hagen, and I was convicted by the state and the feds twice, and one of my federal convictions was overturned. The second one was after they found out I was wrongly convicted of the crime they convicted me of. They convicted me on a different crime. And currently I've been out, I think, about 12 years, and I've just got my associate's degree this December, and we'll be starting my bachelor's in corrections in this January. And so I didn't make the last rally, and originally I was looking and starting to talk about recidivism. But after I met Tina, I started looking into other things within the system. And so while I'm still looking into recidivism, the mandatory minimums have kind of caught my interest. And that's one of the topics I believe I will be speaking on. Mandatory minimums, reentry barriers, education, clean slate legislation, fines, and education, and the convictions. And I guess she said someone else is going to talk about the wrongful convictions, but people being convicted on their emotions, people getting caught up in emotions and not evidence. And, you know, Tina talks about that, a conviction integrity unit. And also evidence-based recovery, like SMART recovery, being added along with faith-based programs.
Okay. It sounds like it's going to be another great rally. And you being added to it is a very, very big deal this year. And Tina shared a lot of great things with me about you, Shad. And I know we've messaged a little bit and liked each other's things, but it's nice to hear your voice. in person or live as much as possible. So very much looking forward to that. And very much looking forward to making something out of it. The mandatory sentencing, as we're talking about the sentencing, it came out under John Ashcroft. It was under Bush and Bush and Cheney and their crime administration, and they were already building a private prison system, and mandatory sentencing was actually, you know, as you know, because of the filled up prisons in Oklahoma that are like, it's crazy. But the mandatory sentencing was actually to facilitate keeping the prisons for profit full, and there's a fine if that doesn't happen in Oklahoma, and so we know that. That the prior governor was very much pro private prisons, and we also know that, you know, there are owners to these private prisons that are making money off of this, and we know there are kickbacks in essence. 25% of all the people in prisons around the world, 25%, the whole world. Now think about that. We're just, you know, we're big, we're strong, we're a force to be reckoned with, right? But 25% of all the people in prison around the world are in the United States. And we're talking about Oklahoma right now. Per capita, Oklahoma has the most prisoners, inmates in the world. Now, I tell you what, you know, the interesting thing is you don't hear so much about all the crime in Oklahoma. When you listen to the news and whatnot, you don't hear that so much. You know, the narrative is, you know, keep that close to, you know, keep that under the wraps. You know, Oklahoma seems very much to control the major newspapers. We've got Tulsa World, we've got the Oklahoman, and they are resistant to sharing anything that that does not benefit them and those that are they are catering to, and we have many instances of that. But so there's just a little bit of history about, you know, how prisons and how public corruption and, you know, the surroundings of the conditions, including how people are convicted these days, how they get there wrongfully or are sentenced and very lengthily in certain areas where they otherwise might not be. And yet, you know, you can see the crimes of some of the public servants that are, you know, basically we're talking catch and release with them, and when somebody else can commit a menial offense compared to them, they could be facing much, much, much time more time than many do, and many of them are there through the denied due processes. So this is a big deal, listeners. This is a very big deal. Give me the dates and the times of the rally, please, and what you are looking for as far as volunteers go, and who you want to show up and why.
The rally is December 3rd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Anybody can show up. I'm hoping to get anyone who has a loved one in prison, anyone who sees the corruption and wants it changed. I want all the supporters to show up and be heard as one voice. We need to rally together, because speaking individually, they they don't hear us.
Go ahead.
Go right ahead.
No, I was going to say that's important, what she just said, how I was on recidivism, you know, and reentry. But now I started looking into mandatory minimums. So because something's not someone else's issue, we got to unite together. And, you know, now I'm all into mandatory minimums. And I've been looking into how the corporations, it's funny that you're doing, that y'all were talking about that.
right.
Are involved in that because the truth in sentencing was actually written by the American Legislative Exchange Council, which, interesting, Governor Stitt, that's who he called in an article where he said he was circling the wagon. And the private prison, CCA, is one of the chief contributors. And a few years back, there was a documentary, The 13th, and they mentioned in there about Alec, and one of the guys interviewed said they were going into community supervision programs, and that's exactly what they were talking about in an article today. And I thought they already knew what they were going to do. But, yeah, it's interesting you're talking about corporations because they're writing legislation and giving it to our lawmakers. And it's important to show, for people to show up at the rally no matter what their issue is. It's important for people to get out and vote because that's what they listen to.
Right.
The
and
legislators listen to
voting. Contact your legislators. Contact your legislators. Let them know how that you feel about that. Listeners, it's very important to help them do their jobs, which some of them are very resistant to doing, as we've learned along the way. And Stephen Burke spends a great deal of time ministering to inmates in prison. And Stephen, what do you have to say about this?
Okay, I didn't quite catch what you was asking.
Well, your engagement with many of the inmates, or with some of the inmates as you're ministering to them, and they're coming closer, hopefully, to being released. You know, how do you feel, you know, what have you learned that they feel about their sentences and you know, those that admit that they've done something wrong and those that genuinely did something wrong, have you ever had discussions with any of them about, you know, whether they felt the system was fair or not after they've, you know, come around and your ministry has, you know, had a positive effect on them?
Well, a good part of them feel their sentence wasn't fair, and some of them were obviously just railroaded into prison on all kinds of ignorant, trumped-up charges. I've actually helped some of the inmates with the lawsuits that they filed against the system for some of that stuff, and I got to read all the documents and stuff, and I know what they said was true, you know, what actually happened to them, and they didn't belong in prison in the first place.
Right.
And that's another reason people, as he was talking about the media not telling all the information, that's another reason people have to research the cases. I see all the time where people post, you know, someone got arrested for something and they're ready to attack, and I hope they get what they deserve. And instead of that mindset, we need to, as a community, sit down, research, know the case before we come to a judgment, whether they're in prison or not, because there's a lot of people in prison who are innocent. You can look at the national exoneration list. It's crazy, and it's due to corruption.
Yep, yep. And And, you know, and as the host club came and spoke at the first rally that we put on last year, Tina, and that right there, you know, is a prime example. And the New York Times just picked up on that. And that's, you know, you hear about all of the charges against someone. Like, you can look at a court docket and you can look at the charges. But a couple things here, a couple caveats here is, number one, you're only seeing certain parts of the docket. A lot of things they don't want you to see or they leave out, okay? Quite often, in cases such as this, due process has been denied. So you're seeing a one-sided story in what is supposed to be a two-sided trial. And,
right.
And so the Holtz Clause, you know, that Daniel Holtz Clause that is sentenced to a couple of lifetimes when you've got victims or alleged victims or you know, who had pointed the finger after they shot for victims to charge Daniel Holtz Clause with sexual crimes that have been, you know, charged and arrested themselves for many, you know, drug uses and prostitution and whatnot. And, mm-hmm. and so you have to really look into, the depths of it and go beyond sometimes even the mainstream media, of course, but sometimes even beyond what you'll see in the court docket. Because in many cases, and this is where we get to where you can tell each other stories, right? You're not going to see mm-hmm. even the full story, even if you do have all of those filings available to you, many of them that involve some public corruption are not available to open because they somehow mm-hmm. became quite controversial and they don't want the public to know about it. Of course, those things that involve minors, those things are not to be shared through for the public's eyes. But there's some big problems in the system, and you can kind of get an idea of where it all started and how it's trickled down and out into this cesspool of wrongs. You know, I'll be civil about it. I'll just say a cesspool of wrongs. And Tina's exactly right. You know, the purpose of the rally last year was, you know, to unite, to get, because there's so many small groups, okay, that are there and they're pushing for, you know, the wrongs to be made right. And there can be, 20 different groups about, you know, the prison, what's going wrong in prisons and whatnot. But this is a time where you still have those various groups, but to unite under one roof with one consistent mm-hmm. voice, even though everybody might not always agree about every single aspect that should not be the deal breaker between uniting or not, but to, you know, everybody should agree on getting rid of the public corruption, on the transparency, on the due process. Okay, but maybe not everybody will agree with certain sentencing policy changes or whatnot, but we can agree. And I'm not posing an opinion here by any means, but we certainly can agree on the fact that we want the public corruption to be gone. We need to expose them. We need the people engaged in this to be sanctioned. And there are no immunities when it comes to corruption. I don't care who you are, okay? And remember, back to our Constitution, we are all to be tried equally, okay? And we need reform. Gosh, we need reform. So,
yes.
So when we're talking about constitutional law, all right, there's a difference between following constitutional law than following the statutes and the rules and all these things that came after this incorporation that took place in 1871. And then judges make decisions, and those decisions have opinions, and suddenly they're being cited on behalf of what a side wants to see happen or not. And so the narrative changes, and it moves farther and farther away from our constitutional law and rights. And so I don't know, my opinion, you know, where do we start? We have to start somewhere. Get rid of the corruption to begin with, okay? Get rid of the corruptors, okay? And then get to solving, you know, policy issues. Because there's going to, as long as there are corrupt people in office, it won't matter what's written in statutes and laws, anyways, whether it's followed or not. Stephen, your opinion on that?
Okay, what are you asking? I'm here. What are you asking exactly?
Well, we've got this, you know, we do have issues with, we have things that we can ask our legislators to do, which I completely 100% agree with what Atina and Shad are bringing to the rally and proposing to legislators and whatnot, and what people do need to engage in. But what is your feeling about how effective policy changes will be where public corruption is alive and well?
Well, that's a good question, because in my experience, most of this stuff goes all the way from the bottom to the top, and they're all scratching each other's back. So we're going to have to do a lot of exposing and turn the light on the cockroaches, so to speak, before we're going to get much of anything done.
Yep. But do you think the bottom would be doing it if the top wasn't doing it?
Well, not near so much so as they are, at least.
Exactly.
They got plenty of people in high places to back them up, you know.
Right. And the reason they're backing them up is because the people in high places are, you know, they protect themselves, in my opinion, by having those that are willing to submit to those protections and giving them the leeway to abuse power or to turn the backs the other way and make it a for-profit in a for-profit, but more so lining their own pockets on top of that. Tina and Shad, I want to thank you, and you're willing to you're more than welcome to stay on and interject here and there if you would like. But I want to thank you for coming on and telling us about, giving us an update about the rally that's up and coming and all of your hard work that you're doing in the meantime. I would encourage those that are listening that plan on going or able to go, that also if there's any way that you can volunteer to help, to put out flyers, to help with anything, that you contact Tina and Shad and or Shad, and what would be the best way for them to do that, folks?
To contact me, it would be OklahomaPrisonerInjustices@yahoo.com.
Okay.
For me, it would be Shad Hagen 2017@gmail.com. I don't have my other email with me.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be sharing this some more. And where is this taking place again now?
At the Oklahoma Capitol, December 13th. December 3rd. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, okay, thank you again very much for all the work that you're doing and for coming on with us tonight. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
Great to be here. Thanks, Tanya.
Tanya, Stephen, Marty, thank you all very much.
Thank you. And Tina did a great job recently on finally getting heat in the Veneta prison, where they've been without heat up until the 1st of January and in insane conditions. So kudos to you, Tina, for that hard work. So,
oh,
Stephen,
thank you.
No, I'm sure many thank you. So Stephen, what is your, you know, if we get back to this this whole corporation issue and, you know, where this all started to turn around, and you know, just in your own experiences in Oklahoma, where you see it being so rancid, and more so than you know what I do hear or learn about from other states. But again, you don't hear it so much in the mainstream media. And they're doing a great job to, you know, as we know, Mike Hunter, he monitors his own public page. But you're not allowed to do that if somebody has constructive criticism, you know. I know I've been blocked, my things have been deleted, and you're not allowed to do that. So, you know, so it's nice, you know, wouldn't we all like to have a press release go out, you know, and then be able to delete any challenges to the validity and the credibility of the person in that public servant position when it's challenged.
Well, they all have them covering up from each other in my experience. What's going on?
Yep. So what's it going to take now? What's it going to take? You know, look, you've been very much a part of the, you know, Talvin, Oklahoma situation with James Treat and have seen that situation through, and we're in the midst of, you know, certainly Wetumpka in Hughes County as well in Oklahoma. Their mess, in which, you know, we have a little bit of an update there. It's been a while since an update has been provided, but what are the common factors, the common things that you're seeing is going on just in that postage stamp area in Oklahoma?
Well, they're all of them just covering up for each other and trying to do their best to keep anybody from finding out the truth, of course. And it's next thing to impossible to get anything done. You go to this department, and they'll send you to that department. They send you something else, and every one of them is trying to hide something the best as I'm able to determine. And in my experience with the local law enforcement, you know, as far as sheriff's department in times past, you know, it's like pulling teeth to get anything at all done. And I don't know if I'm getting your question answered good or not. I'm having trouble hearing this phone about half the time. It's not very loud.
Okay.
So I can't tell
well,
real
well,
good
my question
saying.
Was a little bit wordy, as I can be, as I admit. I tend to agree with you. There's a bunch of cover-ups, and who'd have thought? You know, we see this in like big cities and big areas, but who would have thought in little towns and little cities that they could actually get away where, you know, everybody's supposed to know everybody.
They ignore the law completely and totally and just do as they please in most of the state, in my experience. They couldn't care less what the law says. They're going to find some way around it.
Right. And so the way that they've seemed to have found their way around it is by, you know, getting to the point where they're called or deemed the good old boys, the good old boy system, as we know is alive and unwell in Calvin, for instance. And of course, that's not a phrase that is only for Calvin, Oklahoma, but it is a phrase that they publicly bolstered, you know, calling themselves, you know, the good old boys, because they had been challenged as being part of a good old boy system, in essence, for being engaged in corrupt policy. And it involved women, too. And actually, we have James Preet on the line with us right now, who is the man who came forward a couple of years ago and has been working on this for years with Calvin, Oklahoma. So we're going to hear, we're going to talk a little bit about Calvin, and then we're going to segue into Wetumpka and those updates and with what's going on. But James, you know, how do you feel about you know, how a small town, thank you for coming on, how do you feel about a small town like Calvin, Oklahoma, versus a big city corruption gets away with it? And thank you for joining us. Good to have you back.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Well, there was a very complex subject that was brought up in the very beginning, meaning the constitutional law and the Constitution itself, and then the incorporation of the United States, because you have two different divisions of quote-unquote law working. You have constitutional law, and then you have contractual law under the political subdivisions or sub-corporations under the United States of America. Let me tell you how that applies in a very simplistic manner. And why all of this is important, we'll skip everything in between because that could go on for days and days and days of discussion. But if you go to Calvin, Oklahoma, is its legal entity Town of Calvin, Town of Calvin, Inc., or City of Calvin? This was a question posed to the Oklahoma Audit Inspector's Office in the Calvin petition to the state of Oklahoma. Stephen Burke was with me in the last visit right before Christmas. The Audit Inspector's Office comes out. They met. We had a time constraint, so we were moving through some things very quickly. But one of the things that was addressed initially was, we are not going to contend with whether Calvin is an illegal enterprise or not. I let it pass at the time because it's very important to this subdivision, political subdivision, subdivisions of the United States of America and the Constitution. They have to be a legal entity, just like you're Tanya Hathaway, just like I'm James Treat. We have to be known as something, and a legal corporation has to have incorporation papers, charter, etc., to be a municipality, to invoke these contractual laws and statutes against you, the citizens. And in this discussion, they say, well, we're going to just kind of skip right over that. Well, I kind of skipped right over it at the time, but I'm preparing the paperwork to challenge them on that, because who exactly are they going to name in their report that they just spent months on in their audit, they have to name a legal name. They can't just skip over like they were intending to try to do.
Right. And cannot be addressed by also known as. Also known as.
No.
You know, you can have the S out.
No. If you have an underlying corporation under, yes, you can be known as Town of Calvert. But that doesn't exist. Because in their own paperwork to the state 8 years ago, the only filings to the state, they list Town of Calvert. Whereas a comparable town in the state of Oklahoma who had the same audit to the state of Oklahoma by the same auditor very distinctly listed Town of Claremore or City of Claremore, I forget which how big they are, incorporated under the laws and such of the state of Oklahoma in the year of blah, 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 spelled out in its entirety. And in the same subsection, Calvin's report simply stated Town of Calvin. Whereas the Town of Calvin town clerk has openly and publicly stated, we do not have a charter. They have there presented themselves with public documents. And as little as a month ago, I was dragged into municipal court by the city of Calvin. The city of Calvin has never existed. They've never had 1,000 people or more. It's never existed. That legal entity
mm-hmm.
has never been formed.
Mm-hmm.
And what's more important about these incorporations, you and I are natural-born sovereign entities. A corporation has to be created. I.e., Town of Calvin, Inc., has to be legally created. City of Calvin has to be legally created. Just as Town of Calvin has to be legally created, either in an O-Town charter or some other historical data, which doesn't exist.
And why this is
important, because they even have a law. Oklahoma State statutes that if you look like, act like for a certain number of years, therefore you are incorporated. But they don't in Calvin's case, they haven't. Because they vacillated between being whatever they wanted to be to cash whatever check or to get whatever tax subsidy or. But there's no evidence in this case of any public notice, public vote, any geographical maps or meets and bounds that are signed off by a surveyor denoting Town of Calvin, Inc.
Okay.
But that's
important
because if you're not incorporated, you can't operate a municipal court. That's the importance of it all. And that applies to
you. Yeah, I understand that. And I agree that is something that should not be overlooked or overseen because – it does change the dynamic of many things, but the state auditor's office has resources available to them, and how a complaint is made or how something is captioned, actually more importantly for this subject, because certainly this is more or less an anomaly in the issues of the public corruption in Oklahoma, where, you know, most people have, most cities and most towns, municipalities have distinguished themselves as one entity or another. So it certainly is a bit of an anomaly, but how...
Well, no,
I believe that how this is captioned is really most important, and I understand the underlying consequences to the situation. And that, for instance, dragging you into court and writing tickets and this that, and the other thing that you know that there's if there's nothing in black and white, then what does it mean? You know, and what standard are they going to hold? This too, and another thought about that is that those that are part of that city administration, that town, forgive me, whatever they're calling themselves, administration, should be named individually. They should be named individually to cover all bases as holders of responsibility. And so anybody who does have complaints or asks for investigations, you know, with any of the investigating parties, agencies in Oklahoma, this is a big deal. It is a big deal. But there should be a manner in
well,
which
the auditors, the auditors recognize the fact that because they said, well, if we were going to accept that premise, they were an illegal enterprise and we should have never began an audit. And I said, that's exactly right. And that's what we discussed in the very first meeting. So they know the ramifications. They just don't want to necessarily deal with it. And their excuse was is that the state tax office recognized them. Okay, that's fine, because I actually have a copy of the letter back, I believe, 2001, where they asked for that to be recognized as a, quote-unquote, corporation for tax benefits, but they never supplied any proof.
Right. And as a result,
because there was never a public election or a public notice.
Right. So
that's on file anyway.
So that's a quandary. So then that has to be dealt with on another level of accountability, that they're not being held to. But that is an instance.
Well, here's the quandary to what you say. Who are they going to name as who they did the actual audit on? What's going to be the legal entity that they put on the state paperwork as to who they audited?
Right. Well, you know, and again, I mean, my immediate answer to that, thought to that, opinion on that would be you name more than less. And as it is being handled throughout the system, certain things are struck off of it when they're deemed not to be the ones that are held responsible and who is to be held responsible. So that's it. That's interesting. That's a very interesting situation.
This goes back to the actual legal entity of the town, which is part of this whole corporate structure that was the start of this conversation.
No, I understand
that.
They
have to have a legal entity.
I understand
and
that
they
completely.
Don't.
And Stephen Burke, what is your input on this?
Well, that's true. They got to have a legal entity, and they don't want to have one. They don't want to tell what it is, and I don't think they have one at all, best as we've been able to determine.
Right.
They provided nothing to substantiate any claim of any name, legal entity name, nor has their attorney in public meeting. But that's the importance of these corporations. Because in the real world out there, if you don't file your annual reports, you get dissolved. And on the state of Oklahoma's own website, Secretary of State website, 5 years ago, typed in Calvin, Oklahoma, Town of Calvin Incorporated, and it said status forfeited. On the state own website.
Well, and once again, and that's where I am a proponent. I personally give the opinion that that every possibility should be every possibility of responsibility should be captioned, including those that are responsible for admitting the proper paperwork. You know, the council members. So I feel that they should be personally named as well. Does that mean that that will stick necessarily? No. However, if they are, you know, actively criminally utilizing the benefit that they want to benefit as a corporation, and they know that they have not followed through on those, actually, that corporation, then they should be held. It's not as if nobody knows, that it's unknown. People know this. But, I mean, my thoughts go immediately to you name as many people, you name as many defendants, you know, whether it be the town, the city, the council, and individually name the people that have been engaged in the criminal activities that are the council members in Calvin, Oklahoma, those that the complaint is about, or that those that are being added.
That either happens though in the civil lawsuit in the 1984 suit for civil liability, but in a criminal liability, that's why it would go to the grand jury. I said the personal liabilities of naming these individuals would be in a civil lawsuit, a federal civil suit, but the criminal activity has got to be addressed by a grand jury and or a singular petition to a district court by either the citizens and or DA and or grand jury.
Right.
But their own individual, right. In the case of Calvin, Bill Long and Ronan Tweedle ordering a makeshift badge and going to their computer and writing out a citation in and of itself is a federal offense. A felony. But those have to be addressed either civilly and or criminally. But in the case of the auditor's office, this is about actually dissolving the town. If they are what's called an illegal enterprise, meaning a group of people operating under the color of law without foundation, they're an illegal enterprise. And so far, no one on behalf of Calvin, including the state of Oklahoma, has been able to provide any foundation, materials, charters, public documentation of any municipality creation, i.e.
mm-hmm.
a corporation. For them to be even able to operate their municipal court. Now, what the state already found and said that they found severe discrepancies in the codification of the ordinances, which is basically the corporation's bylaws, if it was truly incorporated, and there was going to be a delineation between the administrative and the penal ordinances because it wasn't done properly.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already basically admitted, without admitting it, that they can't substantiate, or Calvin hasn't provided anything to the auditor's office, that they are a municipality and or a corporation to operate as a legitimate local government, as a subdivision of the state of Oklahoma.
Right.
But this all still goes back to the very premise of when the United States became incorporated and everything that went in. Basically changed from a constitutional law to a contractual law state, with the Supreme Court still supposedly operating under constitutional law, but everything down below operating under contract law. And I know we lost a whole bunch of people in that conversation, but those are the structural needs that your local government and your state government have to operate on, and you were talking about it in a way to attack them, you have to use their own structure and their own contract law against them. If they're not adhering to it, how can they impose it on you?
Agree. And that's been an ongoing problem that's got to, that people need to be held accountable for. But we're going to move on a little bit from that. Because that is an anomaly, and it is an intriguing one that's got to be resolved, and people need to be held accountable, and the Calvin, whatever it is, needs to be a legal entity, whatever it is. But let's move on right now to let's move on right now to talk a little bit about Wetumpka and the situation. We're getting a couple comments. There's a coming in. We've got Carl Jameson, whose brother was murdered, and he is a he's got together a group for you know, for on behalf of you know, victims of victims, you know, for instance, his brother's murderer, you know, was let out on bond, and you know, this trial still has yet to be to go to full, to be sentenced and, you know, charged in full and whatnot, and found, what, you know, how guilty and to what degree. And yet, you know, Carl Jameson is dealing with, he's dealing with, you know, being subpoenaed for Facebook posts. Well, why doesn't the lawyer just go ahead and subpoena Facebook and see how that does instead? But he says a lot of people walk in the streets that are guilty as well. Corruption goes both ways. And I agree. And that was the case with your brother being murdered. So I completely agree. Andrea McGee Crab, I can't get it to play. Well, hopefully you've got it to play, Andrea. And if not, we will provide the archive. Wetumpka, Oklahoma, also in Hughes County. Well, they had quite a weekend over there. And Stephen, why don't you give us a little bit of an update on what you've learned about Wetumpka as it is in Hughes County?
Are you asking me?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'll start back. This won't take but just a minute, but I'll start back with James Jackson, the mayor of Wetumpka, whom we call JJ most commonly. Anyway, concerning the deal that's going on now at Wetumpka, JJ bailed a person that I'm told was Kirk Monroe Stafford out of jail last year and hired him to work for the city of Wetumpka. And was Mr. Stafford on official business last night at approximately 9 p.m. when he was pulled over driving the city of Wetumpka electric truck, or was he just using it for his own personal use? To get further into that story, the sheriff's department, after they'd pulled him over, called the Calvin Police Department to get Joe Chitwood to bring his canine unit dog down there to check out that there truck. And
Joe Chitwood is an ex-chief police, chief of police, who was fired by this rogue mayor, and he is now chief of police over in Calvin. It was a good thing. And there's a new chief of police who's been in Wetumpka for about 4 months now, Joe Cooper, who is standing for the citizens standing for the law as the law should be. So, but Joe Chitwood has canines, right?
Yes, he's got his own canines, and he was asked to bring them down there, which he did. And the dog hit multiple times on the city of Wetumpka's electric company truck that was being driven supposedly by Kirk Monroe Stafford. And that's the nice canine units that Mayor Jackson says is useless. That's what his words were. Anyway, the canine hit on the truck multiple times. The truck was searched by the sheriff's department, and what is believed to be methamphetamines and also other controlled dangerous substances were found. Kirk Stafford also, I'm told, failed a field sobriety test and was arrested for driving under the influence of drugs and possession of controlled dangerous substances, according to multiple sources that I've talked to today. And Kirk Monroe Stafford has a rap sheet that's about a mile long, beginning way back 1999 to present, 14 charges in all that I have here in front of me, all of which are public record, which brings us to the question of why the mayor bailed this individual out of jail last year and why he was hired to work for the city of Wetumpka. And what was he doing out in this city vehicle at 9 o'clock at night with multiple types of what's believed to be illegal drugs on the vehicle and failing a field drug test itself? You know, I would say that the mayor's got some questions to answer.
Yep. Especially why is he bailing these? Was he bailing these people out? It's my understanding that several complaints have gone forward against the city of Wetumpka and that are naming some, you know, and the mayor that are naming some of these atrocious policies that he is trying, that JJ is trying to force upon the citizens that are actually illegal, and even at the public the council meeting last Thursday, you'll see that even JJ's wife had an issue with something that he was saying and disagreed publicly to JJ, who runs these meetings, even though it's typically the duty of the city manager, which is what's his name, Don Jett, who does not show up at any of these meetings and seems to be a public a puppet for JJ since he took reins there. So there are complaints that have gone out from several. The mayor has just fired somebody who is working for the chief of police there, and that's not the mayor's place to make that happen. It is, and if the mayor didn't fire him, then it came by way of the city manager. So those details have to be squared away. But the chief of police, who happens to be Joe Cooper, I believe his name is, he gets to hire and fire. And that the mayor and the city manager are trying to have a reign over everybody that is in the department. Now, they are the bosses of the chief of police, it's my understanding. But then the chief of police is the one who should be creating the budget, utilizing the budget, and managing his force. But it seems as though everything has to go by JJ Jackson, who anytime there's a stop, it needs to be run by, or he has to be notified. And why would that be? You know, why is it that they don't want the police officers to actually do more than just speeding stops and running through the main ways when there is a city there to run, where drugs are run, where illegal activities take place? So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts would be that somebody's got something to cover up. And it's working the same way here in Calvin, too. The supposed city manager, which is not even a position that's allowed under our form of government, is trying to control the police department here in Calvin. And that's totally illegal. And, they need to investigate this mayor's background, for one thing, over there in Wetumpka. It seems to me that the reason he doesn't want anybody talking to the city council, everything got to go through him, even in the meetings now, and submit the questions in advance, I'm told, is somebody must have something to cover up. I mean, what are they trying to be so secretive about? Why is he trying to keep everything under a tight military rule under his thumb? Something's going on that shouldn't be, just like this deal last night. a man that he bails out of jail and hires to work for the city of Wetumpka that has 14 charges that I know of, that's public information, against him, is hired to work in the city electric truck. And then he's busted last night and accused of being high on drugs. And
yeah,
having multiple types of drugs in the city vehicle.
Yeah, by canine dogs that are quote unquote useless. Give it a break. No wonder Joe Chitwood was fired there. Because you know what? For some reason it smells like the mayor wants to use everything to his advantage and leverage. And for him to go ahead.
In my opinion, certain people that was investigating that mayor was getting a little bit too close to the truth, and so they had to be got rid of real quick.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So Calvin's run amok. It's at the state level where auditors are involved. Let's see how that goes, given the situation with the unknown structure of Calvin.
Yeah, and the auditors wanting to do the same thing that the city of Calvin and the rest of this bunch is doing is ignore the real legitimacy of the law and just do what they want. Any legitimate or legal anything has to have a legal entity or name. There has to be a name, corporate or otherwise, and the city of Calvin or town of Calvin or whatever they're going by don't have one. And if they do, they sure can't prove it, and they're not willing to tell what it is. And they're using multiple entity names to operate under. So that's all a bunch of hogwash.
That's a bunch of hogwash. And now there's something good that did happen over in Wetumpka that we should bring to light, because we have to realize when we persist, good things can happen. Well, there was a council meeting probably about 4 or 5 months ago where there was nominations pretty much made by the mayor himself to name himself as a reserve officer and his wife, Rebecca, on the council as a reserve officer, and everybody was up in arms over it, of course, except for them. But what went right is that actually did not happen. It didn't fly. The Jacksons were stopped from their pipe dream of being reserve officers, which would have simply given them even more access to information that they get and have anyways. But that being said, we've got a chief of police over there, Joe Cooper, who is standing by the truth and by law and the Constitution. And then we've got a chief of police over in Calvin that is doing the same. And so, you know what, the stakes are getting a little bit higher for these corruptors, just how far they are going to push things. And if they're smart, they're just going to release themselves from their duties and get away as fast as they can and let the good things happen for these, 28 now, these little towns and little cities, and for these big cities too, that you know are under the duress of public corruption. Well, it's 8:28, and I don't know where the time went tonight. Originally, I was just going to start with an hour coming back to the podcast and broadcast, and I last minute changed it to an hour and a half. So I'm going to start saying my thank yous to all that listened here tonight. I'm going to ask you to contact me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com with your story, with your comments, and with your concerns. Please also post, reply, ask on Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed Facebook page, Journeys to Justice Facebook page. Please follow Marty Oakley, PPJG.me, and please tune in too. Stephen Burks, KLRB-FM, Lighthouse Radio out of Oklahoma, Stewart, Oklahoma. Stephen, I can't thank you enough for coming on, and I hope we can do this more regularly because I'm grateful for your input and your wisdom. Thank you for sharing this podcast with your station. James Treat, thank you for coming on. Tina and Chad, if you're still listening, thank you for coming on. And please tune in again next Sunday at 7 Central for Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told. I'm Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and Lighthouse Radio in Oklahoma. My name's Tanya Hathaway. Thank you and God bless.